In Afghanistan, members of the LGBT community are in grave danger. A recent report from Human Rights Watch and Outright Action found that queer Afghans face increasing levels of violence under the Taliban regime. Basira Paigam knows this firsthand. She is an Afghan activist who identifies as bisexual, and she escaped to Ireland a few months after the Taliban's resurgence. While Afghanistan has never been safe for LGBT people, Basira told us that she did enjoy some level of community before the Taliban seized control of Kabul in August. That freedom has ended.
Everything changed. From day it turned to a very dark night. I thought that this is the end of world. This is the end of world. I cannot continue after this. And we all will be killed.
The Irish organization she worked for offered to help Basira flee Afghanistan, but she was reluctant to leave home.
It was very horrifying. I was hopeless. I couldn't think about getting out of Afghanistan. I was thinking that if I go out of Afghanistan, so what will I do there? All of my plans, all of my goals are related to Afghanistan.
To protect herself from the Taliban, she married her best friend, a man. The couple hid in a hotel used by international guests. She didn't leave for 2 months. Her hopelessness turned to desperation.
I was getting too emotional, and I was saying that I will go outside and I will fight with Taliban soldiers. If they killed me, it's okay. I want to be killed. I want to be die, because this kind of living is not the worthy of life.
Basira and her husband eventually got a visa to Pakistan and then made their way to Ireland.
I don't see anything in my future. When I think about my goals, when I think about my plans, I see nothing, because all of them are ruined by Taliban.
Above all, Basira longs to return home.
Afghanistan, with its difficulties, with its problems, it was our home. We want it back. We want it free.
Let's learn more with one of the researchers behind this report. Jay Lester Fader is with Outright Action International. The group is dedicated to human rights for LGBT people across the world. And we're going to ask him for more details from this report. And as you can imagine, it will be difficult for some listeners to hear. Lester, first of all, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we just heard from Basira Paigam, who's able to escape to Ireland just after the Taliban returned to power. But can you paint a picture of what life is like for Afghans like her who are still in the country?
I think one of the interviews that most brought home to me how desperate the situation was a young man who was hiding in an abandoned factory, having hidden from his uncles who had joined the Taliban, who was down to enough food to last him for 2 more days. And he had no way to get money to get more food, and he was afraid to go on the street to do it. That's the level of desperation here. We heard from people who had been gang raped at Taliban checkpoints, who had been hunted down by their family or other loved ones, who had been turned on by other partners or friends who had joined the Taliban. It's really a terrifying time to be LGBT in Afghanistan right now.
I think we should point out that Afghanistan was dangerous for LGBTQ people even before the Taliban had its resurgence. I suppose it's safe to say now that it's even worse.
Afghanistan was never a terribly safe place to be LGBT, but people were able to have lives. They had jobs, they had relationships, they had friends, and now they are literally afraid to step outside their door. One of the most moving stories that I heard in this research was the case of a lesbian who had been discovered by her uncle's family just before in the summer before the American withdrawal. And she managed to make it back to her parents' family. The uncle demanded that she be killed. The parents said no and arranged for her to quickly be married. Before the Taliban returned to power, she felt reasonably certain that her uncle couldn't just come and kill her over her parents' objection. And then he joined the Taliban when they returned to power, and she felt she had no more protection. So she was ultimately forced into this marriage with a man. Her parents sent her and her new husband to a foreign country, telling him he'd have a better chance finding work there. And her cousin then managed to out her to her husband. And now she's in prison in a country where she knows no one and is being beaten daily.
Can you help me understand, though? I hear you talking about family members. I hear you talking about members of the Taliban. Who is it that's carrying out the violence? Is it sometimes hard to know the difference?
Well, I mean, often family members join the Taliban or are supporters of the Taliban. So on that level, that can be a distinction without difference. But there are cases where Taliban officials, people acting in a, you know, in either a policing or a combat capacity, are directly involved in violence. For instance, I mentioned previously a case of someone who was gang raped at a Taliban checkpoint. He was passing to work to pick up his paycheck, had to pass through multiple checkpoints. And at one of them, he was taken into a room and ultimately gang raped for 8 hours by four Taliban guards at that checkpoint. We know of another instance where a group of neighbors essentially had a pogrom against a small group of trans women living in a hostel in the area. And they called the police, who came and took one of these trans women into custody, the Taliban police. And she was held for about 10 days, was, you know, abused throughout, and ultimately dumped on the street in men's clothing and told to return to her hometown with no money, no cell phone. And that was essentially a death sentence because she had fled her family in the first place.
I don't know exactly how to ask this question, but why would the Taliban gang rape somebody for being gay, if they're so horribly against it?
So, yeah, and if it's a complicated question to answer, although it's not unusual for gay people to be targeted with sexual violence, because of course, right, sexual violence is not necessarily about sex in a lot of contexts.
It's about power. Sexual,
yeah, exactly. It's about power and humiliation and punishing people and the like. And that happens in a lot of places, even if the sexual act is taboo. But in the Afghan context, sexual violence is against men is not uncommon, uncommon maybe the right word for it, but it's well known that happens. One thing that is talked about is a practice known as bachabazi, which is the practice of essentially taking young boys into a kind of sexual slavery. And that's often done by police officers or other powerful individuals. So when you talk about sexual violence targeting people who are men specifically who are perceived as effeminate or as gay, that kind of sexual violence as a tool of domination is not foreign. Mm-hmm. The things that we found in our report that make people more vulnerable is being a receptive partner as opposed to the top. That also, if there's any sort of gender variance, if you're perceived as more feminine or if you are transgender, that would make you much more vulnerable. It's a very complicated situation.
So what are the options for these people in Afghanistan? Is the only safe choice to flee or to go into hiding? I mean, what's possible for these folks?
That's a really excellent question. And most people that I've spoken to are choosing to leave. And that's not a good option. Nor is it easy, right. For LGBT people, there are particular burdens on trying to go into exile. The first is just being able to get travel documents. Imagine you're, and this is a case of somebody we interview, but imagine you're a transgender woman from a place outside of Kabul. You have to get to Kabul to get a passport. Well, that means an overnight bus ride, which means passing through multiple Taliban checkpoints. We know of one case of a transgender woman who made it to a government office to get an ID card, and the government worker essentially demanded sex in exchange for processing her documents. Let's say you do all that, you have to find a country that will take you. And if you look at a map, all of the countries that are easiest for Afghans to reach include places like Iran and Pakistan that also criminalize homosexuality. Yeah. So it's a really difficult situation.
Right. So here we are, both aghast at the conversation that we're having a great distance from Afghanistan, by the way. And other than talking about it publicly, what could possibly be done to help?
I mean, that's a really good question. And I think the thing that is most in the control of Western governments and to some extent then, right, of your listeners who can pressure their leaders to do something is to be more responsive to the need for evacuation and asylum. And the U.S., which has a very special responsibility to the vulnerable people in a country that it occupied for 20 years, is moving incredibly slowly at getting those people to safety and at taking a relatively small number compared to the need. But evacuation and asylum is not a solution to human rights abuses. There has to be a very clear message from the U.S. and other governments in every engagement with the Taliban around human rights that LGBT rights are human rights. And I know in some cases it sounds far-fetched to expect that the Taliban will ever recognize LGBT people and their rights, but the international community must be clear that that's non-negotiable. LGBT people in Afghanistan have the same right as every other Afghan to be safe in their country.
What an awful story. Jay Lester Fader with Outright Action International, thank you for taking the time to help us better understand it. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.